Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on the show today. Jason Rollison will join us today to talk about the Pirates in spring training. We had Matt Leon on to talk about the Phillies the other day. Neil Coulong today. We'll take a look at the combine. By the way, Garrett Sickles and Chris Godwin both were invited to the combine in Indianapolis. On Saturday the 4th will be the Godwin workout day, and on Sunday the 5th will be the Sickles workout day. Then eventually everybody will get their shot at Pro Day here, which will be in the neighborhood of the third week of March, right around there. Don't have the exact date yet, but usually it's right around 2.5 to 3 weeks into the month. Usually around the 17th to the 21st, somewhere in there. All right. Another big day over at the Four Letter Network. Here are their big headlines today. Let's see. Draymond Green, Dolan using slave master mentality. Melo expects to be with Knicks after deadline. Forbes says the Knicks are still the most valuable franchise in the NBA at $3.3 billion. Okafor focusing on playing amid trade rumors. Fleck is allowed to use row the boat at Minnesota. Edelman likens Garoppolo to Favre and Rodgers. These are the headlines. Who cares? Who cares? Who cares? Who cares? Who cares? Those are the headlines? Really? And they wonder why. They wonder why they're struggling. Oh, well. Not a good night for Penn State basketball. They went in last night and didn't play well. Nebraska has all their players back now, the same ones that allowed them to get off to such a great start in the conference, beating Indiana and Indiana, winning at Maryland. They also beat Purdue this year, too. They've played the number one rated schedule in the country, and they just played downhill last night. Penn State did not build any walls. Didn't build any walls. Yeah, Penn State gets within 5 with 6 seconds to go in the half. You're thinking to yourself, all right, well, 5's workable. That's a workable number. You know, and at the end of the half, as opposed to the end of the game, the clock doesn't stop. So they score with 6 seconds to go, and the clock's rolling. They get the ball into Ty Webster, and you don't even think they're even going to try a shot. He fires over to midcourt to Jack McVay, and from midcourt, he drops it. So instead of being down 5, you're down 8. And I'll be frank with you, I didn't think that was a workable number. They've got a week off. And as I said yesterday before the game, that regardless of result, the week off was coming at a perfect time for this team. The odd thing is, I think it's coming at a perfect time for the veterans and not the kids. The kids are doing just fine. They need, down the stretch here, better play from Shep Garner and Peyton Banks. They're the veterans. They're the ones that have been around the block before. Play like it. Team, play like it. Last night they were combined 1 for 12 in three-pointers last night. On a night where Patrick Chambers was hoping to get 8 three-pointers to hang in there, they got 4. Garner didn't have any. Banks had 1. They'll have Purdue in here next Tuesday at 6. Purdue ranked 21st in the country. I have no idea what it's going to be like crowd-wise in the building on a Tuesday night, even though it's a quality opponent. I don't know. I had some fan tell me, "Oh, the crowd at Rutgers was great." I said, "Why? It was what? No. I didn't think the crowd at Rutgers was great." So, Tuesday night, last night in Lincoln, was sold out. I thought that crowd was great. All right, we will take a break. Sean, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Afternoon, sir. Great to see you made her back home after the, it was a tough loss last night. I saw that half-court shot at the half. It's like, oh, boy.
No, I just...
You called it here yesterday afternoon that, yeah, this seems like they were running out of gas, and it's the perfect time now to recharge to head down the stretch.
Well, we'll find out. It'll start with Purdue. It's a split, 2 home, 2 away. And we'll find out how it plays out. I like what they have foundation-wise. You got a really good foundation. Now they have to find some consistency. But part of the consistency is, again, going to the veterans. Not the kids, the veterans. That's where they need the consistency. All right, we'll take a break. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Presidents Washington and Lincoln could have never imagined that their day would mean one thing. Huge deals at Sunbury Motors Ford. Sunbury Motors Ford is having their annual President's Day sales event. Choose from 4 city blocks of new Fords. SMC has 85 new Ford F-150s to choose from.
It's America's best-selling truck for 40 straight years for a reason.
See for yourself why Sunbury Motors has sold over 40,000 trucks. 2016 F-150s are slashed over $12,500. And 2017s start at just $24,953. Pick from over 30 of the top-selling 2017 Ford Escapes, starting at $18,880.
This is the lowest price since President Bush was in the White House.
SMC also has 14 2017 Ford Focuses, starting as low as $13,975. Plus 0% financing for up to 72 months is available on many models. Don't miss the President's Day sales event at Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. Proudly serving all of Central Pennsylvania since 1915.
When Woodrow Wilson was in the White House.
Jason Rollison today on the Pirates going to spring training. Neil Coulong on the NFL Combine. Coming up on Friday, Mike DeCourcy from Sporting News and Big Ten Network will join us to talk about college basketball. Joe Lenardi, Joey Brackets on the show Tuesday. It's that time. It's that time. Bucknell has Loyola of Maryland tonight on Eagle 107. I talked to Doug. Of course, Doug brilliantly does the games himself alone. I said, you know, what's the big difference between, you know, the football season and basketball? You know, I mean, you're working alone in basketball. And he said, inner peace. I said, I don't know what that means. I mean... What are you laughing at?
No, I was thinking, you know, you'd think by now, since we're now you know, past National Signing Day, I could have sworn the suit would get the breakdown of the incoming players to Bucknell. You know, before you know it, we'll have Coach Susan on talking about the spring game.
I'm looking forward to that. I always like talking with Joe.
I'm trying to think of other ways we can maybe get him on one time before that.
Oh, good. That'd be great.
Well, you and him, I could hear you guys talk ball all day long.
Yeah, I really, really like him a lot. He's a good guy. He gets it. He gets it. He understands what the big picture is. Now, look, he wants to win as much as anyone. He's a competitor. But overall, he gets it. And
well, for any Bucknell Bison football fan that doesn't get his weekly message, his weekly email, go to BucknellBison.com and sign up for that.
Right.
Excellent to read every weekend. He usually comes out every Sunday morning.
Yeah. All right. I thought those were great headlines from ESPN. Really kind of made you feel like you were covering sports. Like three stories on the Knicks.
Three words. Football is over.
Yeah, but three stories on the New York Knicks. I mean, do you realize that the New York Knicks story is a regional story that they're trying to force down everybody's throat nationally? Most people don't give a darn about Charles Oakley. Most people don't even remember him playing for both the Bulls and the Knicks. Now, in New York, they do. But Charles Oakley is no national figure. Okay, what they did to him was wrong. I mean, I understand that, what they did to him was wrong. But nobody knows who James Dolan is. Nobody really has a handle on who Charles Oakley is. And nobody cares if people... I mean, I'm talking about the nation. The nation. You know, why does some fan in Jefferson City, Missouri, care that Charles, other than the entertainment value of Charles Oakley getting thrown out of Madison Square Garden? I mean, that is a regional, local New York story that has regional, local importance. It has no national importance. Yet it's covered as if... I don't know where we're going in sports right now. I really don't. Yeah, I mean, I realize you've got to do certain speculation stories. Okay, let's speculate resumes for the NCAA. All right, that's fine. That's a legitimate story where you're trying to somehow break it down the way the committee thinks. I mean, I got that. Lonzo Ball's father says that he'll be better than Curry in the NBA. That's a story? That's a story. Really? I don't care what his father thinks. I don't care what his father thinks about anything.
Let's see how the team does against USC this weekend first. get through the regular season and see how they do in their own conference tournament
I've watched him play. He's really, really good. He is a 6'6 version of Magic Johnson the way he plays. Magic, of course, 6'9. He's a 6'6 version of Magic Johnson.
How would you describe his shot, though? He has a weird style right before the ball leaves his fingers.
Yeah, it does, but it still rolls off his fingers, though. He makes everybody around him better, and he has the ability that what he does is contagious. The entire UCLA basketball team has become a much better passing team, in part because of him. He has made them think about pass first and about leading guys into scoring into better shots. Now, that's pretty impressive when a young player can do that and have that kind of influence on his teammates. But his father says, Lonzo will be better in NBA than Curry. Okay. I have three words. I don't care. I don't care what you think. It's not a story. I don't care. Let's wait 5 years and see if he is. I don't know. There are a lot of people who think he won't be the first guy picked in the draft. Markelle Fultz of Washington may be the first overall player taken in the draft. Here's another one. Ex-Falcons wide receiver Roddy White. Really? What does it say here? Irate at Super Bowl collapse. He doesn't play for the Falcons anymore. He's not playing. I don't care. There are a lot of people who are irate at the Falcons for collapsing. What do I care if Roddy White is? Why do we do so many stories that I look at and go, I'm not clicking on that. I don't care. Now, you get some other ones that are, you know, I think are interesting. Okay, top NCAA resumes. Okay, fine. I mean, that's fine going over that. San Diego. This is a story that's interesting. A San Diego developer has contacted the NFL and wants to build a stadium for the Raiders. Now, I find that story interesting. That story has some substance to it. The Raiders have a big problem with the Las Vegas thing now that Sheldon Adelson's pulled out. And being involved in casinos would have been a problem for NFL ownership. And Adelson is probably behind the scenes the most powerful guy in Las Vegas. And you knew when San Diego was vacated, that would become a very attractive area for somebody. If the Raiders were to move to San Diego, that would be a huge problem for the Chargers. Huge.
Yeah, could you imagine all those ticked off fans? Yeah, we'll welcome in the Raiders with open arms, and now you have, you know, the Chargers high and dry out in L.A. in a city that pretty much in a nutshell doesn't want them.
They don't care about them. I mean, their tickets are going to be so much more expensive than the Rams because of the smaller stadium. They're going to have a 30,000-seat stadium. Now, here's the embarrassing part. Sean, I think 4 of the 8 home games will not be sellouts.
An NFL game with less than 30,000 people, I mean, that's, you know, pretty much unheard of.
Right. I think 4 of the 8 games will not be sellouts. Now, one of the sellout games will be the Raiders when they come in. Because the Raiders in Los Angeles are very popular.
Yeah, you could have 2/3 Raiders fans and 1/3 Chargers fans.
Right, 20,000 to 10,000.
Yeah, you're sold out, but...
Yeah, good news.
That's even more of an embarrassment.
They didn't come to see you. Oh, they came to see the other guy. Again, I understand the monetary part of it. Remember, the Clippers for a long time were... We're a franchise that was so far under the radar in Los Angeles. Then they became good, and they ended up selling for $2 billion. Now, that part I do understand, that being in Los Angeles and having the Los Angeles brand name on it does bring with it a financial cachet that you can't get many other places.
Oh, it's like you and I were talking after the show yesterday, you know, Tony Knopp out in California. He's all over that. He's got to be having a field day with this.
Oh, yeah. We're your home of the suit, WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
We don't do any best of shows here. That's because we don't have any. That just put a smile on Lawrence's face.
Someday we will. We'll let you know. Working on it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're working on it. Jason Rollison on the Pirates in spring training. And Neil Coulong today on the Combine, which, by the way, Garrett Sickles will go on Sunday the 5th. And Chris Godwin on Saturday the 4th of March. We'll talk to Neil about the Combine next half hour. Friday, Mike DeCourcy, Sporting News, Big Ten Network. Tuesday, Joey Brackets, Joe Lenardi will join us on the show. Before we get to Jason Rollison, let's get to this day in sports history. 1946, Edith Houghton, at the age of 33, was signed as a baseball scout by the Phillies, becoming the first female scout in the major leagues. 1953, the first American to win the women's figure skating championship, 17-year-old Tenley Albright. 1962, CBS-TV bought the exclusive rights to college football games from the NCAA for $10,200,000. 1965, NFL teams pledged not to sign college seniors until they had completed all their games, including bowl games. 1996, the NCAA Rules Committee voted to require a tiebreaker in all NCAA games. What you see today. Let's put the ball to 25 and go from there. 1998, Dale Earnhardt, for the first time in his career, won the Daytona 500. It's this day in sports history. Jason Rollison now joins us. Jason, here's really the toughest question of the day. Exactly where did the Pirates improve themselves?
Well,
that's exactly right. We start with yes.
It's hard to say, but there's some cause for optimism there, to be sure.
Okay, so in your opinion, where are the improvements just in age, or are there a couple guys you can point to?
I can point to the bullpen unit specifically. It was a unit that plagued them very badly at the beginning of last season. Yeah. Kind of dug themselves a hole to get out of, and really made their starters look more ineffective than they actually were. The bullpen was a strength for the Pirates for a couple years before last season. And this year, through the addition of Daniel Hudson and maybe some modified usage for guys like Juan Nicasio, I really think that unit will turn some heads this year. And I also think the lineup, provided Andrew McCutchen bounces back, would be a very solid one with or without Young Ho Gong in the lineup. And I think they can put some runs on the board. And, you know, with a top-heavy rotation, I think they can surprise a few people this year.
What does the move of Marte to center and McCutchen to right do for this team defensively?
Well, McCutchen was by far and away the one player in all of baseball last year who lost the most runs, in other words, for their team. He lost 28 runs for the Pirates, according to defensive run save last season. And just by moving him away from such a demanding position, that number will improve. What it means is that McCutchen's arm strength, which has faded over the past couple of years, could be minimized in right field, especially at PNC Park. There will be some runners that try to take an extra base on him here or there, but as far as directly impacting, you know, runs scored, his arm will be hidden there a little bit. And with Marte in center field, that will also make up for any kind of route inefficiency that Gregory Polanco has a habit of getting into out, who will now be in left field. Marte can cover those mistakes by McCutchen and Polanco very well with his range.
What did the signing of Nova do for the rotation?
It provided a lot of stability because you have Garrett Cole and Jameson Taillon coming back. Both have some question marks. Taillon is a second-year player. We'll have to see if he can replicate his success from his first 18 starts. Cole had pretty much a lost year, if you look at it on the whole last year, after having a very good 2015, so there's some question marks there. No, so Nova provides a little bit of stability there, and there was nothing that I saw last year from Nova that doesn't make me think it can't be repeatable this year. His main key to looking so good last year was actually his first strike percentage. He threw twice as many first strikes to batters as he did in his time with New York over the past 3 years prior. So if he can continue to do that, get ahead in the counts like Ray Sears seems to have him doing, then you know that would be a very good thing for this rotation.
What about Tyler Glasnow?
Well, Tyler Glasnow, of course, is a highly rated prospect going into last year, a highly rated prospect again this year. Had a cup of coffee last year, I believe, 23.1 innings, and over those 23.1 innings, had very good velocity, but next to no control, if I'm being quite honest. You never know what you were getting from him on a pitch-to-pitch basis. A lot of that stems from an inability to throw a changeup effectively. And when you can't mix speeds, you know, hitters can pretty easily key in on you. He's adding a two-seam fastball this year, but still going to be working on the changeup. So for this year, I would expect the Pirates, you know, unless he shows very well in camp, I would expect him not to break spring training with the club and perhaps start at AAA and show that he can throw that third pitch and changeup, you know, consistently.
Where's Austin Meadows in this mix, in your opinion?
Well, he's right on the doorstep, and I had a chance to talk to him last year when he came through State College with the Black Bears on a rehab assignment, and just talking to the kid, you really get an idea that he is all that he's built up to be and more. He's the Pirates' top position prospect, obviously, a top 10 prospect in all of baseball. Has all the tools. To be quite honest, he kind of struggles a little bit when he jumps in between levels. We saw that last year when he went from Altoona to Indianapolis. But he has a tendency to figure things out very quickly. So I think if there's a need, and that's the key part there, if there is a need, the Pirates won't hesitate to bring him up. If there is no need, they'll play a little more conservatively, as they should. But you will definitely see Austin Meadows at the major leagues at some point this year.
Why can't the Pirates solve their first base issue?
That's a fantastic question. The first answer is that they've not really paid attention to it in the draft and developing their prospects. So they haven't had that internal option that they've, you know, so desperately craved. There's a couple of guys in the fringe top 30 prospect level that could make the switch over there. Will Craig comes to mind, who was drafted as a third baseman but could get over to first base eventually. The second part of your answer is they just kind of look around Major League and saying, you know, power is kind of commoditized now, and you know, it used to be that the power hitting first base is what you wanted, but now power can come from elsewhere. There's more guys who are hitting 20 home runs in the major leagues than the guys who are hitting 40 plus and playing first base. So the position has changed a little bit, but the Pirates also have a problem developing there for sure.
What about the Gung situation? Is this a big mystery as to whether they'll even have him this year?
You know, there's definitely going to be a suspension of some kind. That the trade for trading Frank Duncan, a AAA pitching depth option, to the Diamondbacks for infielder slash utility man Phil Gosselin, who some would consider the light version of Sean Rodriguez, was very telling. They made that move specifically because they do believe there is a suspension of some kind coming down the pike. I think it will hinge on what the Korean court system does. But they'll have him this year, but it's going to be – I would be highly surprised if he starts the year at the club.
Right. Backup catcher, what do you look at right there behind Cervelli?
Well, it's interesting because Chris Stewart was signed to an extension just before last season, a very team-friendly extension. Don't have the numbers in front of me, but if I recall correctly, it was less than $2 million per year.
Right, it was.
Right around,
yeah.
Right, there you go. So they have no qualms about, you know, perhaps having Stewart take a seat and bringing up Elias Diaz, who, by all accounts, is healthy, is a top 10 prospect in their system, their best catching prospect by far. Very solid defensively. Not much of a bat to speak of, but when you're talking about a backup catcher, that's fine. And I think that if he shows that his bat is at least acceptable during spring training, it may give the Pirates some pause. They can easily eat Stewart's salary. But Stewart is such a great guy in the clubhouse and good to have around that I think they might, you know, try to figure out a way to stash him somewhere. But definitely not going to carry three spring training, that's for sure. But as of now, I would say Stewart is in the lead there.
All right. Do you think they did better in the Melanson trade than some people realize?
Oh, absolutely. If you've not seen Felipe Rivera pitch, you have to understand that Fangraphs identified his changeup as possibly the best pitch in all of baseball because he has such separation between his fastball and the slower stuff that it makes it really hard for a hitter to key in on it as long as they don't know when it's coming. His guy is going to be under control for 6 years. He's just growing into his frame, so his pitches could even get a little more velocity in the years to come. And I think even the most critical Pirates fan would agree that spending, you know, $15-plus million on any closer, you know, albeit one as beloved as Mark Melanson, is kind of foolhardy. And I think the Pirates definitely identified a need to maximize their asset, and they've done that with getting Rivera.
Jason, does this end up being, in your opinion, maybe a committee situation and not just a closer?
You know, I want to say, in my heart of hearts, I want to say yes, but Clint Hurdle has really given us nothing in his past usage that indicates that would be the case.
Right, yeah, he's always gone with a guy.
Yeah, But what I think might happen is he might now be more apt to change that guy than he has been in the past. So that's on the table. Tony Watson is the incumbent closer, per se. Really struggled at times during last year, especially in the last month of the season. Watson's been overused more than 12% more than any other reliever in baseball over the past 4 years.
Right.
So it's really starting to catch up to him. And I think they'll have a quicker trigger finger this year. But as far as, you know, rotating guys in and out, Clint Hurdle's not quite there yet.
Right. Who do you think might be the fourth outfielder on this team, Jason?
That is really tough. You've got John Jaso is taking some reps there. Yeah. Adam Frazier, solid but unspectacular rookie last year, kind of could play the corner outfield spots. So I think it's going to be an internal option. I think they're pretty much done in terms of their lineup and position players. And Phil Gosson as well could play both corner outfield spots. So you're going to see a rotating cast of characters. None will have the impact that Matt Joyce had last year, a late signing in spring training last year, who really paid dividends for them.
Yeah, he really did. I mean, he was a big plus for them. What will be the top questions that you would like to see some semblance of an answer between now and opening day?
I really want to see how the back end of the rotation will shape up. Right now, the Pirates are projected to have no left-hander in their rotation, which is not necessarily a bad thing.
Right.
I can think of a couple Cardinals teams over the past 5 or 6 years who've had all righty rotations and have done pretty well. But you'd like to see a left-hander for balance. Steven Brault had some starting experience last year at the big league level, but not necessarily a player you get excited about. So for me, the number one question that I'm looking at is the back end of the rotation, because I really believe the bullpen will bounce back. I think the lineup provided McCutchen can at least approach his 2013 numbers, can be very good. So it's really going to be up to the starting pitching for me.
Always a pleasure, Jason. Always a lot of fun talking with you.
You got it. Thanks, Steve.
Coming up on Friday, Mike DeCourcy, Sporting News, Big Ten Network. Next Tuesday, Joey Brackets. Joe Lunardi will join us on the show. It is a relatively quiet day in sports today. We're in between the NFL, the Super Bowl, and of course, then the Combine. The NBA All-Star Game is this weekend. Woo-hoo! Will not watch. But the Charles Oakley thing is a fascinating story for this reason. It's not a national story. Yeah, it's turned into a national story. It is a local New York story. That's all it is. Now, I don't want to see the guy mistreated. And the guy obviously has been a great player in the history of the Knicks and the whole thing. Not the best they ever had. But a hard worker. Blue-collar guy for a franchise that hasn't done much. I mean, they've won two championships in 70 and 73, which is a long time ago. And you can talk about mismanagement of the franchise, but again, is that a national story? Now, it's become a national story because, of course, the optics of it are not good. But but ESPN's turned it into a national story because of their coverage of the NBA. Right? It's because of their coverage of the NBA over and over and over. Everything's a soap opera. Everything's a... Now, obviously, a former player getting tossed out by security, but what got me is that they threw out the security guy, too. Like, really? I mean, he got fired. But it's a local story. It is not a national story, in my opinion. I think most of the country is sitting there going, really? Remember the deal with the Rams and Eric Dickerson? Remember that?
Oh, yeah. He had press cred. He had a team cred and was able to be on the sidelines during the games. And then they, the team cut him off. Or Jeff Fisher said, no, I don't want you on the sidelines anymore, because I guess he was pretty vocal on how he felt about the team.
Right. Well, I mean, how long did that story last?
Well, the longer it lasted, it didn't look good for Jeff Fisher, that's for sure.
No, but I'm saying, though, but it was, again, it's a regional story. That's all it is a regional story. And I don't know. I don't know.
Well, I think it was a bad look from the Knicks right from the jump. I mean, they were, wasn't long after it, the whole thing went down, they were posting stuff on Twitter, we hope that Oakley gets the help he needs, and that was an automatic red flag. Okay, does the organization know something we don't? Does he have, what kind of issue is he having?
Right. And he's probably not having any issues.
Oakley, though, he has been pretty much, ready, willing, and able to share his side of the story since the whole thing happened. Not even a couple of hours later, after the whole thing went down, I got up the next morning, and I guess he was at a restaurant not too far, or at a bar not too far away from MSG, and they pulled a microphone up to him, and he was sharing his side of the story.
Well, of course he was. He felt wronged, but I don't know. I see stuff like this, and it's a New York story. And there's nothing wrong with a New York story, but it is a New York story.
Well, he kind of figured, though, Adam Silver would step in sooner or later. I mean, if they're saying, if the Knicks is the most valuable organization, valued at $3.3 billion, you'd think, this is starting to get an overall bad look for our overall league. Something's got to be done.
Right. No, I mean, it looks bad for the league, but I mean, the vast majority of Americans have no idea who James Dolan is. Right?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. Last time I saw him on TV was, how long was it? 2-3 years ago when they introduced Phil Jackson as the GM.
That's about it. See, what happens is that there's a group of reporters that are based out of New York that cover this stuff. So it's a big deal to them covering it because it's a New York story. But nationally, do you think the vast majority of people give a darn how the New York Knicks are run? They don't care how the New York Knicks are run.
I think pro basketball fans in general, if the Knicks are relevant, then that's important to us. Kind of like with the Raiders. They were out for a decade and a half. Yeah, they're in the playoffs. They're relevant. That's great for the league. So I guess they figured, this is the only way we keep the Knicks in the spotlight. even though the topic's not good.
I think most people don't care about the New York Knicks. They don't know who James Dolan is. And the vast majority think that Carmelo Anthony's a selfish player. Carmelo Anthony gets more publicity for a guy that on a pro level's done less